From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, major developments in the Middle East over the weekend as Saudi Arabia's oil production was targeted. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has pointed to Tehran as being behind the attacks, which took half of Saudi Arabia's oil production offline. Florida Congressman Ted Yoho, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, joins us with the latest in just a moment. And the New York Times published an alleged bombshell accusation against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh yesterday. However, they've had to walk it back as the alleged victim did not recall the purported sexual assault in question. I'll talk with Carrie Severino, the founder of the Judicial Crisis Network and the co-author of the bestseller Justice on Trial, the Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. We'll talk about why the left is persisting in their attacks against Justice Kavanaugh. Also, those on the left consistently claim President Trump's rhetoric is incendiary. It is dividing the country. Well, my question for them is, were they listening to the Democratic presidential debate last Thursday night? Former Congressman Beto O'Rourke's screeching proclamation that he is going to take people's guns, quite frankly, is nothing short of incitement. I'll talk about it. And Richard Noyes, director of the Newsbusters at Media Research Center, joins me with the top 10 takeaways from last Thursday night's presidential debate. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. By the way, we are in Nashville today, broadcasting from our BOT affiliates at 1160 AM and 89.1 FM. Our thanks to the BOT Radio Network for carrying Washington Watch across their expansive network. Well, as I mentioned, The weekend saw some major developments in the Middle East. Multiple relatively inexpensive drone devices were able to pierce Saudi defenses in a way that traditional Air Force assets could not, flying long distances to drop potent bombs that apparently set vast portions of the Saudi petroleum infrastructure ablaze. The Saudi oil sites attacked on Saturday interrupted about 5.7 million barrels of crude oil production, which represents a little over 5% of the world's daily supply. Yemen, Iran-backed Houthi rebels battling Saudi Arabia took credit for the attack. A senior U.S. official told reporters that evidence from the attack indicated Iran was behind it instead of the Houthi group that had claimed responsibility. On Sunday, President Trump suggested U.S. investigators had reason to believe they knew who launched the crippling attacks against a Saudi oil facility and vowed that America was, quote, locked and loaded, depending on verification, end quote. Joining me now with his analysis and more information is Congressman Ted Yoho, who represents the 3rd District of Florida, and he serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you, sir, for taking time out to join us on this Monday, a big weekend. I mean, this is a quite significant event that is really targeting the world's oil supply. But even though Saudi was the focus, this is a strike at the U.S.
Oh, absolutely. And what you're seeing, Tony, is a proxy war being played out. You've got the Houthi rebels that are backed by Iran. And then don't be surprised if you see Chinese hands on this or even Russians, you know, with the technology. And the Ayatollahs were freed up all that money under President Obama that was able to foment more terrorist activities like this. And so, unfortunately, I think the world is going to see more of these until Iran changes their mindset.
Now, that would be an explosive development if we could show that the procurement of these devices were done with the funds released from President Obama to Iran. What do we know now? I know the Secretary of State, very meticulous in his statements, and is not given to overstating facts, went
right
out and said that Tehran was behind this. What information do we know?
Well, again, I think the fingerprints are on that. You know, who else has that technology that would be willing to share it with Houthi rebels? We know Iran has been sponsoring them and giving them the technology. We've known they've updated their missiles. And again, this goes back to the Iranian, the JCPOA, when Iran got that influx of money.
Mm-hmm.
We know that they went up and they updated the cruise missiles. And we know they did that. And that's fact. And so for this kind of technology with the drones, and keep in mind that Iran shot down one of our drones years ago, or one of ours crashed, and they were copying that technology. And then we also know, if you read, I'm sure you have, Michael Pillsbury's book, The 100-Year Marathon, China had been helping the rebels in Afghanistan shoot down our cruise missiles with cheap technology. I think it was $25. To throw our missiles off course. And so they've been working against us, too, in this. And so it is going to be a long, drawn-out thing. And unfortunately, and let's hope this is not the way the future is going to play out. You know, let's hope people just focus on their economies and their people.
Yeah, that's an important aspect of this. I mean, you have the short-term implications here, the disruption of the oil supply, but now Saudi says they're back online. Things are going to be okay. The president saying authorizing the release of reserves to make sure the oil supply is not disrupted. It's interesting how the markets react to this. You know, 5% of the world's oil production represented here offline for a period of time. The markets immediately jumped like 20%, crude oil. So it's interesting how the markets sometimes drive these events bigger than they really are. But as we look at this attack, 19 points of impact from bombs or missiles. As you said, there's some suggestion it could have been cruise missiles. This is pretty significant. It's pretty targeted and pretty effective. So there's a lot more to this than, you know, just, you know, a couple guys out there with drones.
Right.
The long-term implications, though, this shows some very significant vulnerabilities in the world's energy distribution system.
Boy, it sure does. I mean, if this doesn't drive it home, you look at when Iran exploded those ordnance on those tankers coming through the Straits of Hormuz, the ability for them to disrupt the world's oil market, and as you said, Saudi Arabia accounts for 5%, this is paramount why America's energy independence has to be achieved. And under President Trump, he's done a remarkable job. The Democrats tried to roll that back the last vote series we had. And this is something that shouldn't even be a partisan issue. This is something that what's going to make America stronger. This is a policy that will make America stronger to become more independent. And if anything, we should be exporting more oil so that when there is a hiccup in the Middle East, it's not felt by the rest of the world, that they can rely on American energy coming out of, a trusted ally and partner that's not going to play these kind of games.
You are absolutely correct. That should be the talking point right now, in addition to, you know, standing firm in our foreign policy. But this should underscore the domestic policy of energy independence. And as this administration has pursued that, in opposition, facing fierce opposition from Democrats, we need to continue to develop that domestic resource here in the United States of energy of all sorts, so that we do not find ourselves in a vulnerable situation. And as you pointed out, being able to help our allies around the world from these hiccups, which could create ripple effects throughout the markets.
And we've seen this play over and over again. I'm 64, and I remember the oil embargo. And the Middle East was the cause of that, mainly Iran. And I remember as a kid thinking back, why has my gas prices gone up? Why am I rationing 10 gallons fill up? And, you know, it just perplexed me that we have been indebted for that long. It's time that we Americans wake up and say we are going to get our energy from American sources or trusted allies like Canada or Mexico, and that we should become energy independent, American oil or North American,
right,
and send out to the rest of the world, this is where you want to get your oil.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida, my guest, talking about the attacks on Saudi Arabia oil production over the weekend. You mentioned the mid-1970s. I recall that. I wasn't old enough to drive, but I was in the back seat, and I can remember the long gas lines. And, of course, part of the reaction to that is that we did create the oil reserves, which are in my home state of Louisiana and in Texas, where we have some cushion there. And the president, as I mentioned earlier, has authorized the use of those reserves to kind of to cushion any kind of disruption in the flow of oil coming in. But from a, let's switch from the oil aspect of this to the issue of foreign affairs, national security, and what might be the response. The president saying he's locked and loaded. Is that a red line?
I think he's sending out a warning. This president, he means what he says, unlike President Obama. He is letting people, you are on notice. And, you know, leadership's tough, especially in the chaotic world we have today, with what China's doing, North Korea and all these other countries. People need to have a clear understanding of what this president will do. And I think he showed that when he bombed Syria back when Assad used those chemical weapons again. And it's been quiet over there. And this is something that people need to understand, that he's not playing. He wants security for all people, and he wants people to go on and be prosperous. But you can't have disruptive forces like Iran, like North Korea, to continue to do what they're doing. Look what's going on in Venezuela. That's a disruptive force that we've never seen in the Western Hemisphere, and that's going to have to be dealt with. And I'm just happy President Trump is there and not Hillary Clinton. God knows what would happen if she was there.
Well, when you look at, I mean, you look at the global landscape, I mean, there are so many issues popping right now. But this one, the complexities here are quite significant. The Middle East, always a cauldron of, you know, complexity, but it's uniquely difficult right now. But you have, as you pointed out, you have proxies in this battle. So it's going to take a little bit of investigation and some hard evidence to be able to go right back and pinpoint Iran, and they're making sure you have their fingerprints on this before you take any type of military action.
Well, I would hope that was the way it would be. You know, I think when we do, well, let's pray we don't have to do anything. But it should be 100% irrefutable, and I don't want to do another Afghanistan.
Right.
You know, I mean, look at where we're at with that 18 years later and trillions of dollars and all the lost life of our valuable men and women. And we need to draw the boundaries, though, and say this is not acceptable. I don't care who's behind it. It needs to stop.
Right. I would agree with that. I agree. We have to protect American interests and our allies. But I would hope that the day of nation building is behind us, because trying to export our idea of republicanism, democracy in the Middle East just does not quite work. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us.
Stable government.
Yes.
We need to promote stable governments.
Right.
Talk to you
Absolutely.
Later.
Congressman Ted Yoho, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, the New York Times, what we call down south, crawfishing, backing up on a story on Brett Kavanaugh. We'll talk about it with Carrie Severino next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, late Sunday, the New York Times walked back an explosive report about a resurfaced allegation of sexual assault by Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh from his college days. The Times piece by Robin Pogrebin and Kate Kelly, adapted from their forthcoming book, The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, alleged there was cooperation of an incident in which Kavanaugh, as a college student at Yale, exposed himself to a female classmate at a party. Now, news of the supposed bombshell prompted calls from numerous 2020 Democratic presidential candidates for impeachment of Kavanaugh. However, in a major revision late Sunday, a Times editor noted a significant detail was added, that several friends of the alleged victim said she did not recall the purported sexual assault in question. The Times also stated for the first time that the alleged victim had refused to be interviewed and has no comment about the episode. Joining me now is Carrie Severino, founder of the Judicial Crisis Network and the co-author of the bestseller, Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. Carrie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be here.
Carrie, isn't this just more of the same?
This is absolutely just repeat play on the same playbook, except for the allegations get less and less plausible each time. The allegations in this case are like third-hand gossip that no one involved can corroborate, including, as you pointed out, the woman who is allegedly the victim says she doesn't remember this, apparently, and that was this minor detail that somehow these authors forgot to include in their piece. I mean, it's shocking the ridiculous smears we are now hearing against now Justice Kavanaugh. So it is a really shameful moment here to see that people are trying to continue to draw this kind of a smear campaign against now a sitting member of the U.S. Supreme Court.
I'm now anticipating as I go through the grocery checkout line that I'm going to be able to get the New York Times right next to the Inquirer because the standard's about the same.
It was an awkward day for them, I think. There were a lot of people, and not just on the right, but all over, that were saying that was really a significant oversight to not include that. But frankly, I've had a chance to read the whole book. There's a lot of issues with the book. There's a lot of things they conveniently omit. There's stuff they get wrong. It's because, you know, when you're looking for a narrative that is just kind of, we need to find a narrative at any cost, people start not actually thinking clearly. That's really what happened through this whole Kavanaugh confirmation process. You know, there were people like the senators who from day one said, we'll do whatever it takes to defeat him. They're willing to do whatever it takes. That means they, you know, abandoning any standards of due process or the normal scrutiny that you or I would give to an allegation like this, just out the window. And I think that's very discouraging to see. And it's important that we make sure we recognize this for what it is, because it is a playbook that keeps getting gone back to time and time again. So you don't have to, wonder, gosh, are there, you know, how much credibility should I give it? Sure, if there's something that really actually has backing up, we should absolutely look into it. But when there's unsubstantiated allegations over and over and over again, we've got to start recognizing the pattern.
Well, my observations here, two things. One is this shows how important the courts are to the left. If they can't control them, they want to marginalize them. And that means the people that are on the courts. But this also shows the same, you talk about the same playbook. This is the same playbook they use with President Trump after the election. I mean, I was at the inaugural. I was there at the march where they had the women's march the next day. I watched the smoke and the flames from the things that they were burning in the streets of D.C. that they cannot accept the outcome, and so they want to move forward in trying to marginalize, discredit, so that everything that is done, in this case, every decision by this justice, is held in question because they continue to go after and attack his reputation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think, and we heard this actually most strikingly from Christine Blasey Ford's attorney herself, Ryan Lovelace, a reporter, turned up this speech that she gave where she said, we wanted to put an asterisk next to his name. That's one of the reasons Christine Blasey Ford did this. She was hoping that if he had a decisive vote, particularly if it was on a hot-button issue like abortion, that his vote would be discredited and because of the claims that she made. That is a utterly political motive, and it just shows they're not willing to just delay and try to defeat a nomination. They're going to go to try until they can destroy this man, destroy his family and everything he stands for. That is horrible. We need to stand against it.
Carrie, does this not have the opposite effect off of what they're trying to do in that, you know, we've seen, you know, justices that are appointed to the court in years past who grow in their position, and they, you know, they want to be received by the broader elite crowd, and they kind of they kind of shift leftward. I think what they're doing is they're making sure that these justices that the president has put in place will never fall into the arms of the left.
Well, I certainly hope that is the case, because this is it just kind of is an illustration of this is not a good faith discussion here. This is, these are people who are really out for blood if they're willing to go to these many lengths on smearing someone. And I think it's also turning off a lot of people in the middle in America. And we know from the reporting we did for Justice on Trial that it turned off a lot of those swing vote senators, people like Susan Collins, who said, I don't want to engage in this kind of a smear campaign. So I do hope it backfires, so people will say, you know what, I'm not gonna allow myself to be intimidated mafiosi style with people trying to threaten my reputation.
Well, Carrie, I hope this also underscores for voters the importance of the court with the left's fixation on it, because that's the only way for them to impose their values on America. So I hope voters take note of this and make sure they support candidates who want constitutionalists on the courts.
Amen to that.
All right, Carrie Severino, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll encourage people to pick up a copy of your book as well. Good read. All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, I want to talk about, you know, the left says the president, his language is incendiary. It's divisive. Well, did you listen to or watch the presidential debate last Thursday night? See, I actually think that was incitement, intentional incitement for some cheap applause. I'm going to talk about it here next on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. I'm so glad that you've decided to join us on this Monday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. By the way, at that website, a couple of things you can find. Information about the Values Voter Summit coming up October the 10th through the 13th in Washington, D.C. You'll want to be a part of that because we've got conservative leaders, both political and cultural, religious, conservative. Look, it's a gathering of conservative leaders. You need to be there. It's a great place to be with like-minded folks from across the nation to find encouragement, to find ideas, and check in on the latest plays, the playbook of how we can win elections and take back the country. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Also, we're still continuing to push forward in our End Birthday Abortion campaign. You can be a part of that. There's information there at the website as well. We're going to deliver 90,000 of those little thermal baby hats, the pink and blue that the newborns have. We're going to deliver those to Nancy Pelosi. She has for over 80 times, they've refused to allow a vote to end infanticide. We're not going to let this go. This is a defining moment for our nation. And you can help us in this effort. We're going to deliver these to her so she cannot ignore the reality of what's taking place in our country. Go to tonyperkins.com and follow the links over there to End Birthday Abortion. All right, I did not watch all of the Democratic presidential debate last Thursday night because I was traveling, but I watched enough. I watched enough to clearly see. I watched a good bit of it. And I watched enough to clearly see how the Democratic Party has accelerated its march to the left. I mean, Joe Biden is to the left of where Hillary Clinton was in the last election. And he's the moderate. Now, I'm not sure that there has ever been a clear contrast between the two parties in modern history. I was thinking about this, kind of mentally going through the history. I think you'd have to go back to the Civil War where the Democrats supported slavery and the Republicans were against it. I mean, I cannot, you've got the Democratic Party wholeheartedly embracing abortion, infanticide, even the presidential candidates on the Democratic side, and they want taxpayers to pay for it. Now, that did not come up in the debate. And some, interestingly enough, some of them, Senator Harris, they were bemoaning the fact that they didn't have the opportunity to talk about how radical they are on abortion. Now, I'm not sure what the real contest is between the Democratic candidates for president, capturing the White House or being the most radical. Or, of course, they may see it as one and the same. I'm not sure. Now, I'm going to get to my point here. Over the last 2.5 years, the media is constantly saying the president's rhetoric is divisive. It's dividing the nation. It's incendiary. It's explosive. Well, all right, were they listening to the Democratic presidential candidates Thursday night? Now, former Congressman Beto O'Rourke essentially shredded the Constitution in exchange for a cheap round of applause on the issue of guns. Here, I want to play just a short clip. This is a short clip of what he had to say when he was asked about his call to take guns. Now, there's been some Democratic president, candidates call for gun buybacks, voluntary submission. He doubled down when he was asked, are you saying that you will take people's guns? Here's what he had to say.
Yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Now, to me, that's incitement. That is incitement, because there are some people that take him at his word that the Democratic Party is going to come and take your guns. Now, hold on. I've said this before, and you're gonna get tired of hearing this, but I hope you'll share it with your friends, because they want to bring up gun control. They want to talk about the instruments of violence, but they don't want to talk about the motivation and the source of violence. And look, I am a military veteran, Marine veteran, police officer, used AR-15 in both settings, AR-16, AR-15 in the civilian setting. I'm fine sitting down, have a conversation about keeping guns out of the hands of those who are not qualified to have them to protect the public. All right, but it has to be a part of a broader conversation about what's wrong in America. It's not the absence, as I've said before, not the absence of laws. It's the absence of morality. And what is driving that? It's because we have driven God and religion from the public square. It's because we're removing every aspect of the idea that there is a God to whom we're accountable. And the flip side of that, a God who created us. And therefore, because he created us in his image, we have value. We've taken that. We've robbed our children of that idea. Now, if we want to have a broader conversation, I'll have that conversation. But if we want to just talk about taking guns, I'm not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about it from a holistic standpoint, and we need to push back on the left. Every time they talk about gun control, let's talk about how they've controlled God, or tried to, in his access to the public square. All right. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about last Thursday night's presidential debate with Richard Noyes, who's with the Media Research Center and the Newsbusters. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, Shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, let me remind you, the Values Voters Summit coming up October the 10th through the 13th in Washington, D.C. You will not want to miss this event. It is the premier gathering of social conservatives from across the country. Find out how you can be a part of it. I'll save you a seat, but hurry. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Again, let me thank Bot Radio Network hosting us here in Nashville, 1160 AM and 89.1. They carry Washington Watch daily, and we're in Nashville for some events this evening. And so our thanks to Bot Radio Network for allowing us to use their studios. All right, last Thursday night, ABC hosted a Democratic presidential debate in Houston, Texas. Shows you how the Democrats are going after Texas, by the way. There were some interesting aspects. Now, as I mentioned in the previous segment, I did not watch the whole thing. I watched enough, though. Believe me, it was enough. There were some takeaways here. I think some things that we need to be listening. And it's interesting. I'll just say this point. On Twitter, not that I do a whole lot of it, but I do some of it during the debates, I noticed that it's mostly liberals who are listening and watching the Democratic presidential candidates, and mostly conservatives who watch the Republicans back when they had their debates. I think we need to be listening to what they're saying. I go back to the party platforms, okay? You've heard me say this before, but it's fact. 74% of the time, the Democrats do what is in their party's platform. That's three-quarters of the time. Republicans, it's 79%, almost 80% of the time they do what's in the party platform. So what they say actually kind of matters, especially when they're echoing the party platforms. All right, here to talk about some of the key takeaways from last Thursday night's debate is Richard Noyes. He's the Media Research Center's research director and a senior editor at newsbusters.org. Richard, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, Richard, what's number one for you in terms of takeaways from last Thursday's debate?
Well, I think the big picture is just how extreme a lot of these candidates were. They were, they were talking about, whether or not they should end private insurance for everybody or just slowly have it wither away with something called the public option. You know, they talked about releasing lots of criminals from the prisons. They talked about confiscating guns. I mean, they just went down the list. Reparations payments, as impractical as that might seem. And this was not seen as controversial by the press. I mean, the press, if Republicans had a debate that was so far to the right as this Democratic debate was so far to the left, the press would have made their extremism the number one story the next day. Instead, they were toasting and celebrating some of the more extreme things. I think Beto O'Rourke's call for banning guns was sort of the top thing. And you just did not get that sense that, are Democrats either too extreme to be trusted with government, or are they so extreme they're blowing their chances in the election? Neither one of those sort of became major stories. It was much more about style and liking the what people saw there. And I'd have to also add, you have the third debate in a row now where you had these liberal journalists asking basically friendly questions to these candidates. George Stephanopoulos is, of course, a former he was the main anchor for ABC. He's, of course, a former Clinton campaign aide and spin doctor. And Jorge Ramos, who was one of the other questioners, is the anchor for the Spanish language Univision TV. I mean, he basically said that, after the election, his job was to resist the Trump administration. Well, he certainly showed that on Thursday night as well.
Yeah, in fact, I got a clip I want to play of Jorge Ramos in a question that he asked of, I think it was of Mayor Pete. Here, listen to this.
President Trump has called Mexican immigrants rapists and killers, tried to ban Muslims from entering the country, and separated children from their parents. His supporters have chanted, build the wall and send her back. Do you think that people who support President Trump and his immigration policies are racist?
Anyone who supports this is supporting racism.
Now, before we get to the biased nature of the question, I mean, Mayor Pete swallows it hook, line, and sinker, and yes, absolutely. Anybody who supports this president, his policies are racist. I mean, how do you win friends, influence people with statements like that?
Well, I mean, if you don't, I mean, I think, if one of the goals of the Democrats in this campaign is to reach out to people who voted against them in the last election and sort of bring them into the fold, that may not be the way to do it, is to call them names like that. And then, of course, yes, look at the question. I mean, this is, that is the most extreme example I think we had from Thursday night. But when the questions from the journalists and the answers from the Democratic candidates sound exactly the same, you can't tell who's who. And this is one reason why I think the public has lost a lot of faith in journalism as these sort of the impartial umpires of our elections. I mean, the credibility problem with journalism is so bad. I'm not sure, what role the public would broadly see, would accept both sides would accept for journalists in an election, because they're clearly seeing as playing for one side or the other.
Yeah, and that's kind of a shame, quite frankly. As a former journalist, I was a television reporter for a few years, but also how we have relied on the media to inform us and to get information to us. But now we have seen it started happening during the Obama years, but now during the Trump, after his election, the mainstream media clearly has become a part of the opposition party. And there's not a pressing in on the left to hold them accountable. And there's on the right side, I mean, when it comes to conservatives, they just simply attack. Now, I do want to ask you a question. Ramos also, it's the first time I heard this, and I've been saying somebody needs to ask this question. And he did. So I give him partial credit. He asked Bernie Sanders, he said, you see what's happening in Venezuela. How is the socialism in Venezuela different than what you're proposing with socialism here? And Bernie completely evaded the question. He talked about, well, my socialism talks about health care for all. My socialism calls about a living wage. My socialism, well, isn't that what the socialism in Venezuela promised too?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good question. We spotlighted that the next morning on our Newsbusters blog. But, you know, that is one of the questions. I mean, the problem that Venezuela had is the government took over a lot of these aspects of people's lives and then couldn't figure out how to pay for it. And they had to get more and more draconian in the way they implemented these things. Plus, you had this whoever was in charge of the socialism, the elites under Chavez and now Maduro were enriching themselves. You've got a more stable system in Scandinavia, which is what he cited as his model. But it's still taxing away an awful lot of people's personal success to bring it into the sort of the government coffers and then redistribute benefits. And, you know, it's one of those systems where, you know, we're seeing it on a smaller scale here with Obamacare. Once you start handing over all that money and all those resources to the government, you can't unwind that. You can't say we want to go back to a private system. I mean, once government takes over something, it's very hard to get government, you know, to back out of the of that control over your lives.
Yeah, in fact, I've got another clip. Bobby, I want to play clip number three of Amy Klobuchar on that issue of health care.
Every study done shows that Medicare for All is the most cost-effective approach to providing health care to every man, woman, and child in this country. I, who wrote the bill, if I may say so, intend to eliminate all out-of-pocket expenses.
When it comes to our health care and when it comes to our premiums, I go with the doctor's creed, which is do no harm. And while Bernie wrote the bill, I read the bill. And on page eight of the bill, it says that we will no longer have private insurance as we know it. And that means that 149 million Americans will no longer be able to have their current insurance. I don't think that's a bold idea. I think it's a bad idea.
So, Richard, are some Democrats trying to distance themselves from this failed policy that Bernie and others are pushing?
Well, yes, and they're looking at the polls that show that a lot of people with, you know, good benefits they've achieved either through their unions or through their work, they don't want to sort of hand that all over to the government. It is interesting. Amy Klobuchar, senator from Minnesota, is pushing for something that is more radical than what we have currently in Obamacare. It was something that Republicans and conservatives fought against because the idea is once you set up a public option that is subsidized by the government, it'll be undercutting private insurance and eventually it'll lead to the end of private insurance. You know, Bernie Sanders wants to go the full Bolshevik route and go all the way to the end of that and just outlaw it right away. You know, the story he's telling, and Elizabeth Warren for that matter, is, you know, if you don't like long, complicated bureaucratic forms, you want the government to be in charge. If you don't like bureaucrats telling you, no, you can't be covered for something, get the government in charge. I mean, you know, this is crying out for media fact checks. And yet, you know, either you see no coverage the next day of these extremely radical things, or you see journalists just asking, tell us more, tell us more. And yes, it's you know, Amy Klobuchar, to her benefit, looks moderate and sensible compared to Bernie Sanders. She's a good old-fashioned liberal when it comes to that. But of course, he's way out in far left field, along with a few other candidates, and that's, you know, gives her the chance to look more sensible.
So, Richard, are voters buying this? Do you think they're being taken in by you know, we've seen the problems associated, as you mentioned, with Obamacare. The many people who, you know, were promised all this are finding out that they don't have coverage, the deductible's too high, so on and so forth. And now they're saying, no, we're going to give you more of the same. Do you think the American public is going to buy that?
They probably won't, although over time you're going to get this repetition of this is the solution. And eventually, you know, you might see people worn down by that. And there's this total lack of critical coverage. I mean, you know, this is something where you have to ask yourself, you know, what will happen, you know, if all of these things were a line item in government's budget and the government has a shortfall, what's going to happen? You know, what happens in other countries that have sort of government as the only provider of health insurance? You know, do people get everything they want, or do they have rationing or long lines and long waits? I mean, that's the kind of thing an independent media would be looking at to sort of hold these people accountable for their promises. We need more of that for people to have sort of a sensible, eyes-open approach to what is being promised. But so far, all I see is people applauding and clapping at things like that, and then Democrats sort of debating amongst themselves whether it's this, you know, a more liberal option than what we have today, or something so radical that, you know, even they sort of blush at it a little bit.
I mean, Richard, I may be looking at it very simplistic, in a very simplistic way, but we have problems with what was kind of a hybrid insurance or a health insurance health system, where we had government, has intervened, and it's not a pure private system, Medicare, Medicaid. But then we had Obamacare saying, look, we just need government to come in and take care of, you know, the gaps. We need more government in here to solve these problems. Okay, so we got that. It's gotten worse. It's been getting worse ever since the government started getting involved in health care. And so now they're promising, no, we're going to solve it by more government. So to me, it's pretty simple. Health care got bad because government got in it, and they're promising to solve it with more government. To me, that suggests it's going to get even worse.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. But, you need, the media in this country need to sort of do a decent job of looking at these issues from the sense of, you know, what's been promised, what was the experience if it was enacted, what's been the experience in other places that have enacted it, and does it fulfill the promise? And I think the more you sort of work through these problems, the more you see that it's sort of a pie-in-the-sky solution that ends up bringing heartache to the people who've tried it. But there's this lack of scrutiny that, I've seen very, very little adversarial aggressive coverage of any of these Democratic proposals that you've seen this year. All the scrutiny seems to be directed towards the Trump administration and their policies. When the president and his people propose something, the media are right there with, 10 experts to talk about why it's a bad idea. They just don't seem to find those experts when it's the when it's the Democratic plans.
And I think when you add these ideas that are being put out there by Bernie and others to the mix of an increasing percentage of younger people who are okay with socialism, it could quite well be a recipe for disaster.
It could be. I mean, if people are young enough that they don't really they've never had enough experience to understand what the downside is of the promise. They've only heard the promise and, sort of the positive side of the story. That's partly their fault for not being more thorough voters. But, this is what we have a media for in this country, which is to present both sides and let people make up their minds. And when the media really limit themselves to being cheerleaders for one side and they're only going to hold the other one side's feet to the fire, they're not doing the job that they're supposed to do to help have an educated citizenry.
Yeah, I think what we need is a field trip to Venezuela. Get a boatload or a busload of young people, take them to Venezuela and let them see firsthand what Bernie wants to turn America into. Richard Noyes, thank you so much for taking time to join us. Appreciate all the work that you guys do at the Media Research Center.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
All right, Richard Noyes. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, here's the takeaway. Here are the takeaways from this. Number one, be listening to what they are saying. Critically analyze what they're saying and talk about it. Don't be silent. Speak up. Educate your friends. All right, out of time. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.